Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver, Jill Robbins, Mario Ritter, Dorothy Gundy, and Phil Deerking. Later, we will bring you this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
American Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was in Ankara on Thursday for talks with Turkish leaders. Tillerson met with Turkey's president and foreign minister. They talked about efforts to defeat the Islamic State group and how to reduce the number of refugees in the Middle East.United States-led forces are increasing their offensive to retake the Syrian city of Raqqa from the militants. Anti-Islamic State coalition partners are looking for ways to return security to areas from which militants have fled. They also want to give refugees a chance to return home.The talks in Ankara were held a day after Turkey declared an end to its 7-month-old military operation in northern Syria. The operation was aimed at clearing IS militants and Syrian Kurds from along the border between Syria and Turkey. Turkish officials have described the operationas a success. They did not rule out the possibility of future raids. It is not clear how the Turkish actions will change northern Syria, where the Syrian government, Islamic State, Kurdish forces, and rebel groups are all competing for territory.Turkish troops are still guarding security areas, where the government also hopes to keep Kurdish forces from linking up to create a self-governing territory. The government considers the Kurdish fighters an extension of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK. The group has been fighting for 30 years.Against government forces in southeastern Turkey. The Turkish operations in northern Syria are ending 2 weeks before Turkey holds a constitutional referendum. Turkish voters are being asked whether to give new powers to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.Professor Jonathan Adelman is with the University of Denver in the United States. He told VOA there is a good chance that the Turks are ending their campaign, but will keep their soldiers right where they are.
What really matters in Turkey right now is the feeling that Erdogan wants to win the upcoming election, and this could be and probably is tied to that, to say, you see, I won, it's all over, no more Turks are dying.
Adelman says the Turkish announcement also takes attention away from the fact that many extremists entered Syria from Turkey.
It also helps to take attention away from the fact that thousands of terrorists went through Turkey on their way into Syria, because Erdogan has failed in his basic effort, which was to destroy the Bashar al-Assad government.
Relations between Turkey and the United States have been tested by U.S. support for the Kurdish militia force, YPG, which is fighting in Syria. In addition, Turkey wants the U.S. government to expel Fethullah Gulen, a Muslim clergyman living in the American state of Pennsylvania. Turkish officials accuse him of plotting last year's failed attempt to overthrow the government. I'm Katie Weaver.
United States First Lady Melania Trump has recognized 13 women activists with the State Department's Women of Courage Award. Trump said the women being honored had shown strength in the face of great danger. These honorees on the stage with me have fought for their rights and for the rights of others. Each battle forces such as governments, the courts, gender bias, terrorism, war, and corruption, and were willing in each moment to face harsh penalties, including imprisonment and death. The award is called the Secretary of State's International Women of Courage Award. The winners have shown support of peace, justice, human rights, gender equality, and empowerment of women at personal risk. More than 100 women from 60 countries have received the awards since it was established in 2007.
The women being honored come from countries around the world. This year's winners include Nguyen Ngoc Nhu Quyen, known as Mother Mushroom of Vietnam. The environmental activist and blogger has been in prison since October 2016. The State Department has called for Nguyen's immediate release since her detention. State Department spokesperson Grace Choi told VOA, "We believe that international recognition for her courage and advocacy will help bring attention to her work to address corruption and promote human rights in Vietnam." Natalie Ponce de Leon was attacked with acid in Colombia 3 years ago. She used the attack to help pass a law in January of 2016 increasing punishments for people who use chemical agents in attacks.
Major Ashatu Usman Isaka was one of the first women to join the army in Niger in 1996. She was honored for causing people to think about the issue of gender in conflict areas. Veronica Simogun of Papua New Guinea was in the U.S. for the first time. She was honored for her campaign to protect women from violence related to their gender. Simogun told VOA, "I am fighting for equality, gender justice in my country." She added, "Women's voices need to be heard, and there should be equality for women and children."
Other recipients include Bangladeshi activist Sharmeen Akhtar, who fights early and forced marriages. Two African rights activists are Malebogo Molefe of Botswana and Rebecca Kobugu, a political and social activist from the Democratic Republic of Congo. The deputy director of the Organization for Women's Freedom in Iraq, Janat Al-Ghazi, was among those honored. So was Cindy Arlette Contreras Bautista, who started and directs the group not one woman less, in Peru. Sister Caroline Tahan is a member of the Daughters of Mary Help of Christians group in Syria. From Turkey, Sadat Uzkan received recognition for her education and gender activism. And human rights activists Sandhya Eknali Goda of Sri Lanka and Fadia Najib Tabet of Yemen also received the award.
The award ceremony was held Wednesday. Now the women will travel to several American cities for individual international visitor leadership programs. Afterwards, they will again gather in Los Angeles, California, to discuss cooperation in improving the lives of women and girls everywhere. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Mario Ritter.
The United States has told its diplomats overseas to identify groups whose members should be thoroughly investigated when they request a visa. The State Department sent a series of directives to U.S. embassies and diplomatic offices earlier this month. The department told them to investigate the social media messages and activities of visa applicants. It said officials should be looking for people who are suspected of terrorist ties or of having been in areas controlled by the Islamic State group. Another directive ordered embassies to set up security and intelligence working groups to establish guidance for population sets. It said these measures would identify which people require a detailed investigation before they are permitted in the United States. Even if someone is qualified for a visa, they could still be barred from entering the country if they do not meet the rules set by the working groups. The directives are the first evidence of a Trump administration plan for the extreme vetting of foreigners before they are given visas. Before becoming president, Donald Trump promised such a plan to American voters during the 2016 election campaign. The four documents sent between March 10th and March 17th do not tell which population sets are to be given additional examination. But one document says investigators should ask visa applicants about where they worked, who they worked for, and where they traveled over the past 15 years. The document also tells investigators to ask applicants for all email addresses and social media names used over the past 5 years. The State Department said later it was withdrawing the questions until they are approved by another federal agency. The Reuters news agency first reported on the series of directives last week. Rights groups and others have criticized the directives and accused Trump of discriminating against Muslims. They note his recent executive order to block travelers from 6 countries, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. A federal judge has suspended the government's enforcement of the ban. The rights group Amnesty International wrote a letter to Secretary of State Rex Tillerson last week. It said the documents could provide license for discrimination based on national origin and religion. They could provide a pretext for barring individuals based on their nonviolent beliefs and expression. Social media checks, as well as demands for social media passwords at U.S. borders, have significant implications for privacy and freedom of expression. Law professor Anil Kalhan leads the International Human Rights Committee of the New York City Bar Association. He said the documents will needlessly worsen visa processing backlogs and may lead to applications for visas being wrongly denied. Some refugee aid groups and even State Department workers have said the visa investigation process is already very strong. Stephen Yale Lair is an immigration law professor at Cornell University's law school. Last month, he told CBS News, "We have a terrorist watch database. We have known immigration violators database. We have a criminal background check database that they have to go through. They don't just take the visa applicant's word. They do go through all of these computer databases to verify for themselves that it's appropriate to issue the visa to a particular individual." I'm Dorothy Gundy.
American astronaut Peggy Whitson set the world record on Thursday for most spacewalks ever made by a woman. She set the record while floating out of the International Space Station to set up a new parking spot for commercial crew capsules. SpaceX and Boeing are building the capsules. It was the 8th spacewalk of Whitson's career. A spacewalk is when an astronaut performs a task or mission while outside of their spacecraft in space. Whitson and her spacewalking partner, Station Commander Shane Kimbrough, took the spacewalk in order to complete work on the space station's docking port. Kimbrough disconnected the port during a spacewalk last Friday, and then flight controllers in Houston moved it to a new location Sunday. For Thursday's spacewalk, the astronauts needed to hook up important heater cables to the docking port. They also needed to install shields to protect against strikes by micrometeorites. The port will serve as the second of two docking ports for the future SpaceX and Boeing crew capsules. The mission did not go completely as planned, however. During the spacewalk, the astronauts lost one of the important cloth shields needed for the space station. NASA says it is not yet clear who let the shield go or how it floated away. The shield is to be attached to the station or astronauts at all times. Each shield weighs about 8.2 kilograms. When unfolded, the shields are about 5 kilometers thick, NASA says. The astronauts did report that the three remaining shields were successfully installed. Midway through Thursday's spacewalk, Whitson was set to break another record. She beat the current time record for total spacewalking time by a woman. The record was 50 hours and 40 minutes. It was held by former space station resident Sunita Williams. Williams will be one of four NASA astronauts who will make early test flights of the SpaceX Crew Dragon and Boeing Starliner capsules. The first flight of these capsules could take place as early as next year. Whitson, who is 57, has been in orbit since November. She is the world's oldest and most experienced spacewoman. This is her third stay at the space station. She has spent more than 500 days off the planet. That is more days than any other woman. Whitson is set to return to Earth in June, but she may stay in space for an extra 3 months until September. NASA is hoping she can return to Earth then on an extra seat in the Russian Soyuz spacecraft. It is expected to launch next month and return in September. I'm Phil Dierking.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. Imagine you are taking a trip in a foreign country. You are driving a rental car that you got at the airport. What could help you find your way in this strange land? Signs, for one thing. Think of punctuation as a series of signs. These signals clarify your writing. They show your reader what words are important and what belongs together. Punctuation marks, like traffic signs, show your reader what is coming: a full stop, a minor turn, or a sudden change of direction, for example. One of the most important and most debated punctuation marks is the comma. Today on Everyday Grammar, we will report on common uses of the comma. We will also tell about the importance of commas in American law and how they still influence the meaning of laws. Do not fear. Unlike driving on busy American roads, this report will be fun.
The comma has many uses. Teaching guides say there are lots of ways to use commas in writing. Luckily, we can find patterns among all of these stylistic rules. The first, and perhaps most common, use of commas is to show a pause. Pauses are important in creative writing, such as poetry, and in speech writing. In these kinds of writing, the relationship between written and spoken language is very strong. Historically, commas were used as a way to mark a short stoppage or break instead of showing grammatical differences. However, in many kinds of modern writing, the comma serves a different purpose: to show what is different and what belongs together. Anne Longknife and K.D. Sullivan are writing experts. In their book, The Art of Styling Sentences, they note that commas generally serve two purposes: separating the main parts of a sentence and enclosing words and expressions. Consider the words you heard earlier in this report.
Today on Everyday Grammar, we will report on common uses of the comma.
The comma appears after the word grammar. Why is that? First, it shows the reader, in this case Dr. Jill Robbins, that she needs to pause her voice. Second, the comma shows that what comes before it is serving a different grammatical purpose than what comes after it. In the example you heard, the phrase, in today's everyday grammar, gives information about what comes after the comma. We will report on common uses of the comma. You could remove the words that come before the comma. So, the independent clause, "We will explore common uses of the comma," could be its own sentence.
In the New York Times newspaper, Carmel McCubry writes that the difference between comma usage styles is not always clear. Even when operating under the same stylistic guide, McCubry writes, different people will want to put commas in different places. In other words, there is some level of personal choice when it comes to comma placement. Comma placement is important, not just for writing papers and stories. Consider these two following examples. Part of the dispute in a recent legal case was related to the meaning of an Oxford comma. An Oxford comma is a comma that is used before the conjunction in a series of nouns. In other words, the comma makes clear that the final term is different than the others on the list. A second and perhaps more famous debate involves the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. Both supporters and opponents of gun rights have argued about the meaning of the law. They have argued that the use of commas in the amendment changes the meaning.
A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Some writers, such as Adam Friedman, say the commas in the law are arbitrary, and that the sentence is best understood by taking the commas out. He points out that different versions of the law may have different numbers of commas. He adds that, historically, punctuation was not used in the same way it is today. These disputes center around one common idea. Commas are supposed to make language clearer. However, the commas in the laws created misunderstanding. To go back to our examples of traffic signs, it would be like reading a road sign pointing in two different directions. Both directions cannot be correct.
So, if comma usage can be difficult for native speakers, what hope do English learners have? Luckily, there are two simple steps that can help you overcome problems with commas. The first is to put yourself in the reader's position. Ask yourself if you are using commas that send clear signals to your reader. Are you always using commas in the same way? If you were driving on a road, you would expect the same signs to be used in the same way over and over again. With that in mind, you should always try to use punctuation consistently so that you do not confuse your reader. Another idea is this: write short sentences. In other words, limit the amount of information you include in each sentence. If your sentence has many pauses, then you are increasing the chances that you will confuse your reader.
The next time you are reading in English, look for the commas. When and why does the writer use a comma? Is there a stylistic or grammatical reason they use the comma? How does the comma separate the different sentence elements? With time and effort, you will learn how to use commas effectively. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.